They pursue both radical and incremental improvement. Two final lean techniques are needed. First, in order to form a view in their minds of what perfection would be, value stream managers need to apply the four lean principles of value specification, value stream identification, flow, and pull. Remember, you want to compete against perfection, not just your current competitors, so you need to be able to gauge the gap from current reality to perfection. Then, value stream managers need to decide which forms of MUDA to attack first by means of policy deployment, often called Hoshin-Kanri in Japan, where these ideas originated. At every step, we've noted the need for managers to learn to see the value stream, to see the flow of value, to see value being pulled by the customer. The final form of seeing is to bring perfection into clear view so the objective of improvement is visible and real to the whole enterprise. Toyota certainly had a picture of perfection, derived from its mastery of lean principles, when it set out in 1982 to rethink its Japanese service parts business, and then in 1989, when it began to apply the same concepts in North America. And Tesco needs a vision of perfection for the value and value stream of its beverage lines. Paradoxically, no picture of perfection can be perfect. Perfection is like infinity. Trying to envision it and to get there is actually impossible. But the effort to do so provides inspiration and direction essential to making progress along the path. One of the most important things to envision is the type of product designs and operating technologies needed to take the next steps along the path. As we have seen repeatedly in the preceding chapters, one of the greatest impediments to rapid progress is the inappropriateness of most existing process technology, and many product designs as well, to the needs of the lean enterprise. A clear sense of direction, the knowledge that products must be manufactured more flexibly in smaller volumes and continuous flow, provides critical guidance to technologists in the functions developing generic designs and tools. In addition to forming a picture of perfection with the appropriate technologies, managers need to set a stringent timetable for steps along the path. The greatest difference between those organizations that have done a lot and those that have accomplished little or nothing is that the high achievers set specific timetables to accomplish seemingly impossible tasks and then routinely met or exceeded them. The low achievers, by contrast, ask what would be reasonable for their current organization and disconnected value streams to accomplish, and generally defeated themselves before they ever set out. Focusing energy to banish MUDA. Firms which never start down the path because of a lack of vision obviously fail. Sadly, we've watched other firms set off full of vision, energy, and high hopes, but make very little progress because they went tearing off after perfection in 1,000 directions and never had the resources to get very far along any path. What's needed instead is to form a vision, select the 2 or 3 most important steps to get you there, and defer the other steps until later. It's not that these will never be tackled, only that the general principle of doing one thing at a time and working on it continuously until completion applies to improvement activities with the same force as it applies to design, order-taking, and production activities. What's critically needed is the last lean technique of policy deployment. The idea is for top management to agree on a few simple goals for transitioning from mass to lean, to select a few projects to achieve those goals, to designate the people and resources for getting the projects done, and finally, to establish numerical improvement targets to be achieved by a given point in time. For example, a firm might adopt the goal of converting the entire organization to continuous flow with all internal order management by means of a pull system. The projects required to do this might consist of 1. Reorganizing by product families, with product teams taking on many of the jobs of the traditional functions. 2. creating a lean function to assemble the expertise to assist the product teams in the conversion. And 3, commencing a systematic set of improvement activities to convert batches and rework into continuous flow. The targets would set numerical improvement goals and time frames for the projects. For example, convert to dedicated product teams within 6 months. Conduct improvement activities on 6 major activities each month and at least once on every activity within the first year. Reduce the total amount of inventories on hand by 25% in the first year. Reduce the number of defects escaping to customers by 50% in the first year. And reduce the amount of effort required to produce a given amount of each product by 20% in the first year. Most organizations trying to do this find it easiest to construct an annual policy deployment matrix, which summarizes the goals, the projects for that year, and the targets for these projects so everyone in the entire organization can see them. In doing this, it's essential to openly discuss the amount of resources available in relation to the targets so that everyone agrees as the process begins that it is actually doable. It's also important to note that the process is top-down in the first step of setting goals, but top-down, bottom-up in subsequent steps. For example, once the specific projects are agreed on, it's essential to consult with the project teams about the amount of resources and time available to ensure that projects are realistic. The teams are collectively responsible for getting the job done and must have both the authority and resources from the outset. As the concept of making a dramatic transition begins to take hold, we often observe that everyone in an organization wants to get involved and that the number of projects tends to multiply. This is exhilarating, but is actually the danger signal that too much is being taken on. The most successful firms we've found have learned how to deselect projects, despite the enthusiasm of parts of the organization, in order to bring the number of projects into line with the available resources. This is the critical final step before launching the Lean Crusade. Smashing inertia to get started. We've now reviewed the basic Lean principles, the 5 powerful ideas in the Lean toolkit needed to convert firms and value streams from a meandering morass of muddha to fast-flowing value, defined and then pulled by the customer. However, there's a final and very serious paradox inherent in introducing lean thinking in real organizations to pursue perfection. The techniques themselves and the philosophy are inherently egalitarian and open. Transparency in everything is a key principle. Policy deployment operates as an open process to align people and resources with improvement tasks. And massive and continuing amounts of problem-solving are conducted by teams of employees who historically have not even talked to each other, much less treated each other as equals. Yet the catalytic force moving firms and value streams out of the world of inward-looking batch and queue is generally applied by an outsider who breaks all the traditional rules, often in a moment of profound crisis. We call this individual the change agent. In fact, there's no way to reconcile this paradox, no way to square the circle. The change agent is typically something of a tyrant, what one of our most thoughtful research subjects calls a Conan the Barbarian, hell-bent on imposing a profoundly egalitarian system in profoundly inegalitarian organizations. Yet there are tyrants, and there are tyrants. Those who succeed in creating lean systems over the long term are clearly understood by the participants in the firm and along the value stream to be promoting a set of ideas which have enormous potential for benefiting everyone. Those who fail, like many of the failed leaders of re-engineering campaigns, are either identified as narrow technocrats with no concern for the very real human issues inherent in the transition, or they are dismissed by the organization as self-promoters, who are simply seeking to advance their own position by riding the wave of the next program. Both quickly fall victim to organizational lassitude if not to active sabotage. Because lean systems can only flourish if everyone along the value stream believes the new system being created treats everyone fairly and goes the extra mile to deal with human dilemmas, only beneficent despots can succeed. We hope that many listeners will take up the mantle of the change agent. And we're equally hopeful that self-promoters and cold-blooded technocrats will look elsewhere. Institutionalizing the revolution. Revolutions in business practices don't just happen. There must be an action plan that real managers and real companies can deploy. We knew this in 1996, and we therefore presented a step-by-step action plan that summarized and condensed the plans of attack of our exemplar firms. What follows is an enhanced plan based on our direct observation of the change process in a much wider range of organizations over the past 6 years. We believe that our original plan is still remarkably sound, and we retain all of the steps in the same sequence. However, for many of the steps, we have gained additional insights, yielding advice that makes them more useful. The action plan. We hope you've learned to distinguish value from Muda, and that you want to apply lean thinking to transform your business. But how do you just do it? We've learned from examining successful transformations across the world that a specific sequence of steps and initiatives produces the best results. The trick is to find the right leaders with the right knowledge and to begin with the value stream itself, quickly creating dramatic changes in the ways routine things are done every day. The sphere of change then must be steadily widened to include the entire organization and all of its business procedures. Once this is in hand and the process is irreversible inside your own firm, it's time to start looking upstream and downstream, far beyond the boundaries of individual firms, to optimize the whole. Getting started. The most difficult step is simply to get started by overcoming the inertia present in any brownfield organization. You'll need a change agent, plus the core of lean knowledge, not necessarily from the same person, some type of crisis to serve as a lever for change, a map of your value streams, and a determination to quickly kaikaku your value-creating activities in order to produce rapid results which your organization can't ignore. Find a change agent. Maybe the change agent is you, and if you run a mid-sized or small business, we hope it is. However, if you are the senior leader of a large organization, you may not have the time or opportunity to lead the campaign yourself. You'll need your chief operating officer, or your executive vice president of operations, or the presidents of your subsidiary businesses to introduce the necessary changes, and these individuals may need some direct report helpers as well. Sometimes there are inside candidates for these jobs, but often it's necessary to go outside. Individuals with a make-something-happen mindset are not a commodity available freely. But in the 50 firms we've looked at, it was possible to find the right change agent, and generally after only a short search. While chief executives and organizations failing to get started on a lean transformation often tell us that the problem is a lack of good candidates to take on the challenge, we generally find instead that it's reluctance to bring in executives who will introduce truly fundamental change. We have discovered in recent years that the typical change agent is evolving as lean thinking spreads. When we began our research a decade ago, a truly inspired and forceful leader at the very top seemed to be required to overcome corporate inertia. More recently, we have observed a number of lean transformations in companies of different sizes, in which the point of origin was mid-level managers, and where quiet leadership was effective without need for shouting or theatrics. But still, a leader, someone who will take personal responsibility for change, is essential. No organization has ever undergone dramatic and comprehensive change without someone, somewhere, softly or in a loud voice, taking the lead. This said, we've learned something else about transformational leadership, involving a phenomena often remarked in human political history. Revolutionaries are often poor managers of the new order once it is put in place. We've observed that many of the most effective change agents succeed in the long term because there is someone behind them putting a rigorous system of lean processes in place, someone who can take over and push improvement continuously ahead when the change agent leaves or moves on to other issues. This may be the COO behind the CEO, or the head of the lean promotion office under the COO, or the product line manager reporting to the head of product development, or the value stream manager under the plant manager. The key point is that someone somewhere needs to turn revolution into rigorous system and make sure that everyone understands and follows the new system. When there is no one there to put the system in place, the higher level of performance usually lasts only as long as the change agent is directly in charge. We've learned this several times from hard experience, when a dynamic leader left and the organization quickly regressed to the mean. So our advice, based on years of experience, is that every organization should carefully team a system builder with each of its revolutionary change agents in order to sustain results. Get the knowledge. The change agent doesn't need detailed lean knowledge at the outset, but instead a willingness to apply it. Where can the knowledge be obtained? There are lots of resources for learning in North America, Europe, and Japan. Lean firms are themselves continually improving, and most are happy to include visitors, in particular their customers and their suppliers, in their improvement activities. Freudenberg NOK, for example, has involved more than 500 executives from outside firms in its 3-day Kaizen activities over the past 4 years. And there is a vast literature available, some of it very good, on various lean techniques and when to apply them. Because most change agents new to lean ideas need considerable time to master them, additional help is usually needed right away. In particular, firms will need someone in-house who can act as the expert in quickly evaluating the value stream for different products and initiating Kaikaku and Kaizen exercises. In our research, we've been struck by just how many managers there are in Japan and North America, and increasingly in Europe, who are masters of lean techniques but who are frustrated with their ability to implement them in their current organization. This may make these experts available to you. Even if you find one or more executives with the necessary knowledge, they may well need outside help to move your organization ahead rapidly. There are many consultants claiming lean credentials, and some of them are very good, but several cautions are in order. Any consultant who has no links back to the roots of lean thinking, and who relies mainly on seminars and off-site classroom instruction, or who wants to do the improvement for you with a large team of junior consultants, without fully explaining the logic of what is happening, should be avoided. Similarly, a consultant offering massive offensive to quickly fix specific activities, the pulling rabbits out of hats phase, but with no interest in working with you to create an organization which can sustain lean concepts for the long term, is unlikely to be of real help in the end. This is the type of activity, usually aimed simply at quick headcount reduction, which has given the re-engineering movement such a cynical cast and has caused so many re-engineering projects to fail the moment the consultant leaves. In addition, it's unlikely you'll find one advisor who can impart all the knowledge. Applying QFD to product development, introducing lean techniques on the shop floor, and creating a self-help supplier association require different skills, and firms may discover they need a portfolio of advisors for specific types of knowledge. One underused resource for firms all over the world is the generation of Japanese now in their 60s who helped pioneer lean thinking and create order out of chaos in the 1950s and 60s. The nature of these individuals seems to be that they can't stop trying to eliminate waste, no matter how many years past retirement they may be. Like Ono and Shingo and the generation before them, who continued to conduct improvement exercises right up to their deaths, they have no desire to slow down. We've heard many Western firms give excuses for not availing themselves of these resources, the two most common being that Japanese of the immediate post-war generation typically speak only Japanese, and that these pioneers in lean implementation are too demanding, having learned this from Ono and other leaders of the Japanese miracle after the war, and short on diplomacy when their clients fail to follow through. But these are only excuses. Many of the change agents we've studied developed a successful relationship with the Japanese sensei after a careful search and a period of learning how to work with each other. Typically, the executive made several requests for help before an arrangement was finally worked out. For the true sensei, the change agent's level of commitment is the single most important issue. Finding a sensei who does not speak your language, and therefore needs an interpreter, can even be a help because it highlights the unusual nature of the interaction. This is not just another consultant peddling another quick fix. It's someone changing your whole way of thinking about your business. Similarly, any teacher who doesn't vigorously protest when a pupil fails to live up to his promises and potential is probably more interested in a secure fee than in lasting change. Since first starting our research over a decade ago, we've watched several Japanese sensei, often graduates of Toyota or its supplier group, who taught by starting with a simple problem. For example, they identified a multi-step process within a single facility, with materials transfers and inventory between each step, and quickly converted the isolated steps to single-piece flow within a cell. They then went to the next isolated problem, simple pull systems, and solved it. This created a dramatic sense that rapid change was possible, while the sensei taught lean thinking and lean methods along the way. For the sensei, the most valuable aspect of these exercises was not the improvement in performance in a specific process. Rather, it was the raised consciousness of the managers involved in the change process and their enthusiasm for tackling other problems using the knowledge they were slowly acquiring from the sensei. Behind the stern mask of the sensei, there was a detailed master plan of how all the parts would eventually fit together to create a complete lean production system. But this was not revealed at the outset and became apparent to managers only over time as they learned to see. The problem with this teaching system, which many consultants with no direct link to Toyota and many self-taught managers began to practice it, was that there tended to be no big picture waiting to be revealed. Instead of flow kaizen directed at the total flow of value for a product family, there was only process kaizen, and usually lots of process kaizen, focused on isolated individual steps in many value streams. We coined the term kamikaze kaizen to describe the likely result. Lots of commotion, many isolated victories in the great war against Muda, widespread initial enthusiasm on the basis of early results, impressive amounts of consciousness raising, and loss of the war when no sustainable benefits reach the customer or the bottom line. The solution, which we believe is increasingly grasped, is for firms without access to a master sensei to start consciously at the system level for each product family. This means looking at the big picture, including the most important business needs, and determining the overall plan of march before conducting process kaizen on the individual steps. As we will see in a moment, this is a job for line managers, not for technical advisors who often have reservoirs of specific lean knowledge, but who lack expertise in flow kaizen and insight into the most important needs of the business. The value stream map is an invaluable tool to help line managers along the value stream see the whole, as we will explain shortly. For firms with access to a master sensei, we have some similar advice. Invest early in systematically writing down the knowledge of the sensei and inquire about the big picture before too many process kaizen events are lined up. This may not be an easy conversation, but we believe a higher-level system focus by senior managers, as the sensei proceeds with process kaizen, will produce a better result than either approach alone. A final point about lean knowledge is very important. The change agent and all of the senior masters in your firm must master it themselves to a point where lean thinking becomes second nature. What's more, they should do this as soon as possible. If the change agent doesn't fully understand lean thinking, the campaign will bog down at the first setback, and there will be a first setback. So he or she or you must truly understand the techniques of flow, pull, and perfection. And the only way to gain this understanding is by participating in improvement activities, hands-on, to a point where lean techniques can be taught confidently to others. While doing this, the change agent needs to involve the other senior executives of the firm as well, so everyone's knowledge is brought up to a minimum level to grasp the power of lean thinking. Find a lever by seizing the crisis or by creating one. We have not found an organization free of crisis that was willing to take the necessary steps to adopt lean thinking across the board in a short period of time. So if your firm is in crisis already, seize your invaluable opportunity. Just remember that you can achieve spectacular results on cost reduction in inventories in 6 months to a year, but it will take 5 years to build an organization which can sustain leanness if your change agent is hit by a bus. Most executives in North America, Europe, and Japan have come to realize that even large firms are more fragile and more prone to crises than they had imagined. At any given moment, however, most organizations aren't in crisis, and a substantial fraction is doing very well. How can you, as the change agent, take a seemingly secure organization, for example, like IBM in the 1980s, and introduce lean thinking, which you know will be needed to head off a crisis in the future? One approach is to take some subunit of the organization which is in crisis and focus all your energies on applying lean remedies. Ideally, this would be a business unit with a set of product families, but it could be a single plant, one product development group, or even one product line in a plant or one development team for a specific product. This is also the way leaders who are not near the top of their organization can take the lead on a lean breakthrough. Apply lean thinking to your own troubled business unit or facility, or get transferred to a unit which is in crisis. Then, once dramatic change has been introduced in the unit, the leaders of other units can be invited over for hands-on learning and can take ideas back. Even if no subunit of your business is in crisis, there may be an opportunity for dramatic change if you can find a lean competitor. In our role as advisors to firms, we've often wished that Toyota would diversify to compete against our clients. For example, we recently encountered a case where a classic mass production firm's competition was mediocre and generally not a threat. However, one small business unit of a key competitor had recently made a lean transition with striking results. By focusing on this one instance of superior practice, it was possible to introduce significant change in the corresponding business unit of the client, which then started a change process across the firm. Yet another approach is to find a lean customer or a lean supplier. When John Neal at the Unipart Group in the United Kingdom set out to transform his company at the end of the 1980s, a key element of his strategy was to begin supplying Toyota and Honda in the United Kingdom because he knew they would make demands on Unipart's performance far beyond those of any European-owned customer. He realized that the customer would not only create the crisis, but could also offer hands-on assistance in introducing lean methods to resolve it. For the truly bold executive, there is one more lever of change available, and that is to consciously create conditions in which there will be a firm threatening crisis unless lean actions are taken. For example, we studied a manufacturer of long lead time complex machinery, which has recently begun to sell a critical new range of products set for deliveries in a couple of years at prices that can only be profitable if the firm quickly adopts lean methods to bring down costs dramatically across the board. This is clearly a high-risk path, but if the change agent truly wants to create a crisis, there are many ways to orchestrate one. Because this third step is so crucial, recessions are immensely valuable to firms and society. They create the necessity to seize the opportunity that was always there by embracing lean thinking. And we know that recessions do at least raise consciousness because sales of our books and audio programs, including this one, always rise in bad times. However, just because there is a crisis does not mean the opportunity will be grasped. For a crisis to be useful, leadership and knowledge must lead to decisive action on the tough issues of excess assets, wrong locations, and excess people. However, we are also seeing widespread misuse of the current era of stagnation by managers who simply abandon any efforts to improve their current operations. Instead, they relocate design and production, almost always using mass production methods, to remote locations, often thousands of miles from their customers. The new locations have one key attribute, low factor cost, particularly in the form of cheap labor, and they seem irresistible. The problem is that every competitor can immediately pursue the same strategy, so the advantage is short-lived. In addition, because firms following this strategy add nothing to their knowledge of lean practice, they are very vulnerable to shifts in currency rates and geopolitics that may require them to move again soon. We'll return to this point in a moment in discussing the need to optimize entire value streams on a global basis. Forget grand strategy. We've encountered many firms that truly are in a crisis but respond mainly with strategic analysis. Are we in the best businesses for us to be in? Should we sell some troubled businesses? Should we buy some new businesses? Should we increase R&D spending and try to create a product no one else can duplicate? Should we form a strategic alliance with other firms to achieve synergies? Should we merge with competitors or wage a takeover campaign to gain scale economies and reduce competition? Some of these firms really are in industries with no opportunities, but it's all too easy to start blaming your industry rather than yourself. If you quickly eliminate MUDA in product development, sales and scheduling, and operations, you'll soon discover that as you fundamentally change your cost base, shorten production lead times and time to market for new products, and increase your flexibility, the prospect of your business will look very different. Even if it turns out that some businesses have severe structural problems, you won't be worse off for making them lean because very little capital investment will be needed. Remember, if a major investment is required, you're not getting lean. Your cost base will fall, meaning your operating results will improve even if sales volume and prices don't. You will have also bought time to think, and for a very modest price, even if it turns out that a very lean business is not sufficiently profitable to continue. Map your value streams. Once you've got the leadership, the knowledge, and the sense of urgency, it's time to identify your current value streams and map them, activity by activity, and step by step, by product family. Since lean thinking was first published, value stream mapping has been the greatest area of learning for us because we had not grasped just how much help the average manager needs in order to see the value stream. We made a critical error by failing to connect on one map the flow of information going back from the customer to the producer with the transforming actions on the product in response to this information as the good or service moves toward the customer. Making this connection is the critical leap in being able to see the closed circuit of demand and response that is the essence of value creation, an insight that traditional process maps showing physical transformations alone fail to provide. Thus, we're deeply grateful to Mike Rother and John Shook for adapting Toyota's standard method for portraying material and information flows into the value stream maps we now use. These maps can be drawn at any scale, from a simple administrative process within an office to the global flow of an extended value stream running from raw materials in the ground to the end consumer. The objective in each case is to write down all of the steps in the process as it currently operates in order to define what we call the current state. For each step, we urge managers to ask a set of very simple questions. Does the step create value for the customer? Is the step capable? That is, does it produce a good result every time? Is it available? That is, can it produce the desired output, not just the desired quality, every time? Is it flexible? That is, can it be changed over quickly from one product to the next so that items can be produced in small lots or even lots of one? Is capacity for the step adequate so the product doesn't need to wait on the process? Or is there too much capacity due to designing equipment in large increments of capacity based on demand forecasts that are often wrong? Steps that do not create value should, of course, be eliminated, while steps that are incapable, unavailable, inflexible, inadequate, and under or overcapacitized should be perfected. But this step-by-step analysis provides only part of the picture, because the relation between the steps is equally important. Does the information coming back from the customer flow smoothly without delays? Does the product moving toward the customer flow smoothly from step to step so that total throughput time is only slightly more than the sum of the times needed for individual processing steps? Does the product flow at the desire of the customer rather than at the push of the producer? Finally, is demand leveled at each stage so that small perturbations are smoothed rather than amplified? By writing down all the steps as a team, it's possible for everyone to see the whole value stream under discussion and to agree on its current level of performance. We do have a major concern about value stream mapping. We've found overwhelming acceptance of this tool across the world, and we now find many managers with beautiful current state maps and with equally beautiful future state maps indicating the potential for major leaps in performance. But when we take a walk along the value stream, there is no actual future state. The promised leap in performance has never occurred or has been achieved to only a fraction of the extent possible. When we see this situation, we always ask to see the plan for achieving the future state, and we ask to meet the individual responsible for managing and improving the value stream. And this is the great problem. Usually there is no real plan, or at least no implementable plan, because no one has the responsibility. There is no value stream manager to perfect the process. Introduce value stream management. The purpose of a business organization is to identify and channel the value stream for a family of products so that value flows smoothly to the customer. However, in the first edition of Lean Thinking, we underestimated the importance of the value stream manager. This is the person who leads the mapping process and takes responsibility for removing the muda from the value stream for a product while introducing flow and pull. Instead of describing the role of this critical individual in detail, we concentrated on changing the organization of the firm so that all of the needed skills within functional areas would be directly under this person's authority. We subsequently found in a number of organizations that to get the attention of self-absorbed functions, it can be helpful to change reporting arrangements and move personnel under a product line manager or team leader, at least for one product generation. However, we've also realized that Toyota and more mature lean firms get brilliant results from giving the value stream manager complete responsibility for the value stream and the success of the product, but hardly any direct reports or traditional authority. Instead, The value stream manager develops the vision for the product, determines the current state of the value stream, and then envisions the future state. She or he then treats the functions as the suppliers of the essential inputs needed to reach this state. For example, engineering, operations, purchasing, sales, and lean knowledge. If the functions fail to perform, the value stream manager typically goes directly to the CEO, the COO, or the director of the Office of Value Stream Managers to surface the problem, get to the root cause, and install a fix. Finally, we've discovered that these value stream and product line managers, like so much in the lean world, are fractal. That is, a product line manager overseeing an entire product may work with a number of value stream managers at lower levels, taking responsibility for different courses of the value stream. For example, a chief engineer, to use Toyota's term for a product line manager for an entire automobile, works with a development leader in design, a value stream manager in the assembly plant, and value stream managers in each of the component plants working on major items assembled into the finished product. Each manager is essentially doing the same job, but with varying scope, wide at the top and narrow at the bottom. Begin as soon as possible with an important and visible activity. It would be wonderful if you, as the change agent, can simply decree a new way. We will take all of our value-creating activities and make them flow starting this morning. Then we'll introduce pull beginning tomorrow. Unfortunately, that's not how things work. Instead, you need to start as quickly as you can with a specific activity. Perhaps it's the fabrication and assembly of product G. You need to involve the direct work group, the managers of all the levels between you and them, other senior executives you hope to convert to lean thinking, your sensei, and yourself. Often, although not in every case, it's best to start with a physical production activity, because the change will be much easier for everyone to see. We advise people to start with an activity that is performing very poorly, but which is very important to the firm. That way, you can't afford to fail, the potential for improvement is very large, and you will find yourself drawing on resources and strengths you didn't know you had in order to ensure success. Demand immediate results. One of the critical features of lean techniques is immediate feedback. The improvement team and the whole workforce should be able to see things changing before their eyes. This is essential to creating the psychological sense of flow in the workforce and the momentum for change within your organization. So don't conduct a lengthy planning exercise. Your value stream maps can be completed in only a week or two. And don't bother with simulations to see about what-ifs. We have studied one firm which had even developed a complex computer simulation package to predict what would happen if a single machine was moved anywhere in its production system. Because the predictions were always unsettling, the company never moved anything. Finally, don't waste time on benchmarking if there is any way to get your firm moving without it. For companies that are completely asleep, benchmarking may be an essential first step. However, if you already understand lean thinking and lean techniques, you should simply identify the muda around you through value stream mapping and get started immediately on removing it. Benchmarking as a way to avoid the need for immediate action is itself muda. Once you dive in, if nothing dramatic is accomplished in the first week of working on a problem activity, typically a halving of required effort, a 90% reduction in work in process, a halving of space required, and a 90% drop in production lead time, you've either got the wrong sensei, or you are not really a change agent. Figure out which it is, and take appropriate action immediately. When you get your first results, invite a cross-section of your firm to the report out. The best way to communicate the changes underway is simply to take everyone to the scene of the action and show precisely what is happening. As soon as you've got momentum, expand your scope. We found that it's critical to quickly produce some dramatic results everyone can see by focusing on a particularly troubled activity, usually in physical production. However, as soon as the first round of improvements are in hand, it's time to start linking the different parts of the value stream for a product family. To take a simple example, once you've learned how to convert fabrication and assembly of a sample product from large batches to flow, it's time to learn to pull, both by converting the next upstream process for that product to flow, and also by establishing a level schedule and a formal pull system. As you do this, many problems are bound to occur because the precise purpose of these techniques is to expose and eliminate all types of waste. It's only when the flow stops that you know you've found the next problem to work on. Once you have flow and pull started on the shop floor, it is time to go to work on your ordering system. Kaikaku in the office is not as easy to see as moving machines on the shop floor, but it's equally vital. Start with office activities that are directly linked to the activities you just changed on the floor. Prepare the way by involving office staff in the early shop floor Kaikaku weeks, where they can play a useful role just by asking dumb questions. Why do we do it this way? After they grasp the fundamentals and see the potential, they are ready to ask the same questions about office work. Then, once a bridgehead is established, go to work on all of your activities relating to selling, formal order taking, and scheduling. At the same time you start to introduce pull and production and order taking, you need to start thinking about flow and pull and product development for each product family. This is particularly the case because for most firms, the quickest way to grow sales in order to absorb freed up production resources is to speed up products already in the pipeline. We've routinely found cases in our research of firms which were able to eliminate 3/4 of their previous development time for routine or follow-on products while reducing manufacturing cost and improving quality and user satisfaction. In every case, they boosted their sales substantially at no cost and found uses for their excess people. As you progressively move your lean transformation beyond a physical manufacturing environment, you will find more of a need to transpose the logic of lean thinking to suit different mindsets and circumstances. Even with the most positive attitude, staff in a warehouse or a retail activity will find it very hard initially to see how flow and pull apply to their activities. After all, they don't make anything, in a physical sense, and they spent years blaming manufacturing for not getting its job done on time. For example, Uniparts Industries division had been receiving help for several years from Toyota's Supplier Development Group at their United Kingdom plant, but Unipart found it difficult to know where to start in applying lean thinking to its warehousing and distribution businesses. It was only after a visit to Toyota's parts distribution centers, described earlier, that the light went on, and Unipart's managers could see how to apply lean concepts to their spare parts distribution operations. For instance, once they understood that the MUDA of overproduction translates in the warehouse as faster than necessary pace, and that leveling incoming orders is a necessary precondition for creating flow, they were able to make rapid progress. In their first week-long Kaikaku, they freed up enough space and people to take on a large new account distributing service parts for a major manufacturer of laser printers. Many leaders who don't fully understand lean thinking jump to the wrong conclusion after the exhilarating success of the initial breakthrough exercise. "We've done it for one activity," they'll say. "Now all we need to do is replicate what we've done in every other activity, and we will be lean within a few months." The reality is that you are only at the beginning. The next leap is to create an organization which can channel the flow of value and keep the stream from silting up again. You'll also need to devise a practical strategy to fully utilize all the resources being freed up. Doing this requires placing someone clearly in charge of each product in creating a truly strong lean promotion function which becomes the repository of your hard-earned skills. It also requires a consistent approach to employment in your firm and a willingness to remove those few managers who will never accept the lean way. Finally, it means creating a mindset in which temporary failure in pursuit of the right goal is acceptable, but no amount of improvement in performance is ever enough. Create a lean promotion function. Your sensei will need a place to sit down, although a good sensei doesn't sit down very often. Your process mappers will need somewhere in the organization to call home. The extra people you will soon be freeing up will need a place to go. Your improvement teams will need logistics support. And your operating managers will need continual education in lean methods and periodic evaluation of their efforts to make sure there is no backsliding. In short, you need a permanent lean promotion group, and it should report directly to the change agent. An even better idea is to combine your quality assurance function with your lean promotion function so that quality enhancement, productivity improvement, lead time reduction, space savings, and every other performance dimension of your business are considered equally and simultaneously. Since lean thinking was first published, many people have found this suggestion problematic because they could not imagine that experts from a quality background, a total productive maintenance background, and a lean Toyota production system background could work in harmony. As time has passed and we have listened to many pointless arguments between sensei from Toyota production system, total productive maintenance, and total quality management backgrounds, we've become certain that all of the expert animals in the lean zoo should live in the same cage. This is for the simple reason that all of these experts, once differing vocabularies and professional rivalries are stripped away, are in pursuit of the same goal, the perfect process. Each expert would like to create value streams where every step is valuable, every step is capable, every step is available, every step is adequate, and all steps are highly flexible and linked by pull and flow with level demand. And every value stream manager would like to be able to tap a single supplier of the knowledge needed to achieve perfection. The challenge is to create a dialogue between all the experts so that the value stream manager gets consistent, highest quality advice in a single voice. Only in this way can the rate of improvement be maximized. The lean promotion office should be small, except for periods when excess employees from line jobs are being redeployed and put to work on short-term Kaizen projects. It needs only a few high-quality experts who are willing to master all of the knowledge and methods needed to create perfect value streams and to teach this knowledge as necessary to value stream managers and line employees. And it may get smaller over time. After all, the maximal need for lean knowledge is early in the transformation, when most value stream managers lack critical know-how and the value streams themselves are choked with muda. As time goes on, the value stream manager can devote more time to the particular issues concerning the product, many of them due to changing markets and customer needs. This is because less time is needed for identifying current states and achieving future states once current states are already performing at a very high level. At Toyota, the core lean knowledge is located in the Operations Management Consulting Division, but the professional staff totals only about 60 for a global organization with $127 billion in revenues. Deal with excess people at the outset. Our rule of thumb is that when you convert a pure batch and queue activity to lean techniques, you can eventually reduce human effort by 3/4 with little or no capital investment. And this is before your lean development system rethinks every product so it is easier to make with less effort. Meanwhile, in product development and order taking, converting from batch and queue to flow will permit your organization to do twice the work in half the time with the same number of people. So you've got too many people, if sales remain constant. What are you going to do? The one thing you must do is remove excess people from activities where they are no longer needed. It will be impossible to achieve and sustain superior performance if you don't take this step. But what do you do with these people? As we've noted, many organizations refuse to consider lean thinking until the crisis is very deep. If your ship is truly foundering, some of the crew will have to man the lifeboats or everything will be lost, and you must face this simple fact. The correct thing to do is to face it up front by estimating the number of people needed to do the job the right way and moving immediately to this level. Then you must guarantee that no one will lose their job in the future due to the introduction of lean techniques. And you must keep your promise. What you can't do is conduct drip torture, in which you move through your organization activity by activity, asking your employees to help you eliminate their jobs with no end in sight. As we've tried to explain, in a lean world there is no end to improvement. Jobs are always being eliminated in specific activities. Your employees will react as they should to the introduction of what they will call mean production, with subtle but effective sabotage. Improvements will be impossible to sustain. If you are not foundering, you have a luxury, and you have a problem. You can protect jobs, but it's harder to get people to change. The correct approach is to concentrate on particularly troubled activities and build momentum for change while sending people no longer needed for these activities to the lean promotion function or elsewhere in the organization. As you demonstrate over time that no one loses because lean techniques are introduced, and that in fact everyone's job security is increased, employees gradually become more cooperative and proactive. On the other hand, just one slip, one failure to honor your commitment to protect jobs, will take years to overcome. Devise a growth strategy. We are sometimes contacted by managements who are making adequate profits but see lean techniques as a clever way to quickly raise margins by eliminating as many people as possible under the guise of embracing the new paradigm and world-class competitiveness. We always tell executives with this mentality the same thing. Don't bother. You can save some money at the outset, but you will never sustain leanness. A far more promising approach is to devise a growth strategy which absorbs resources at the rate they are being freed up. Precisely what to do will depend on a firm's situation, but the arrows in the lean firm's quiver are easy to list. Some may wish to pass cost savings directly through to gain volume. And some may wish to speed up development of projects in the pipeline to spur sales and increase market share. Others may focus on shortening production lead times, delivering exactly on schedule, and making exactly the configuration of products the customer wants, again to boost sales of conventional products. Still others may try to convert their product from a good to a service and add downstream distribution and service activities to their traditional production task. And some firms may integrate backwards upstream to consolidate